Welcome to Up Close and Personal. Hockey flows through the bloodstream of Sault Ste. Marie native Kyle Dubas, whose career started with the Sioux Greyhounds as the team's stick boy at the age of 11. Dubas became a student of the game, learning all facets of the sport he loves. 14 years later, at the age of 25, he was named general manager of the team he grew up adoring. Dubas wasn't done, though. In 2018, he propelled to the top of the hockey world when, at 32, he was named the 17th general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Recently, our Brad Cacciamiglio caught up with Kyle to talk about the NHL bubble, his relationship with Sheldon Keefe, and his time growing up in Northern Ontario. Kyle Dubas on Up Close and Personal.
The first thing, let's talk about the NHL bubble itself. What was that experience like? Obviously, it's something very different, very new, considering the circumstances. What was it like? What was that whole experience like of being in the bubble? Give me some thoughts on what it was like.
It was much shorter than we would have liked. First and foremost, it was very different than any other experience in life, where you're kind of confined to a hotel and the rinks and the travel to and from, and everything is sealed off. You can kind of see the outside world from your hotel room or from different spots, but you can't really interact at all. But I thought that the league and we were just in Toronto. I thought the city of Toronto and the portions of MLSC that were responsible for creating it did just a great job in making it as good an experience as could be. We were only there for just a bit over 2 weeks. I can't speak to how it would have been in the long run, but the teams that did advance deep, they all stated to me how great it was and the job that was done to take care of them and ensure that everybody was getting their needs taken care of, not just in terms of food and hotel room and testing, but also some of the other amenities to keep people active. So it was very different, but I thought it was very, very well done, and it went by very quickly for us, unfortunately.
And the break between games, so the pause happens, March 12th or 13th, whatever it was, and then you have that 4+ month break between then and when, when you're getting ready and getting into the bubble. For you as a general manager, what kind of things do you do in terms of, because obviously it's not a typical off season. How did you approach that break, and what kind of things did you do during that time period in your role there?
There wasn't really an approach to it, right? It was just March 11th or 12th, whatever date that was. Everything just suddenly shut down. So the majority of the first part of the break was trying to help our players and staff sort of figure out what to do. Are they going to remain in Toronto? Were we able to keep our facility open in Toronto? Where could our injured players rehab? And then as it became clear that it wasn't going to be a short break, it was then facilitating players to travel home or travel to a different location and make sure that they were taken care of. And then basically from about April on, I spent a lot of my time scouting and working with our amateur and pro scouting staffs on different elements of preparing for the draft and watching as many games as I could. Try to take as much time during the break to learn, reach out to other people in other industries and learn some of the things or catch up on some of the things that had slipped during the year that you just don't have the time to get to. But the majority of the activity during the pause, Brad, was spent on in trying to figure out how we were going to operate when we came back. And then we were able to open the facility for phase 2 at the beginning of June and have players come in. And then, of course, begin our training camp in early July again. And during the break, the majority of my time was spent working with Sheldon, who had come in during the season and really kind of looking at this as sort of his first training camp, even though it was going to be coming back for one exhibition game in the playoffs, but just making sure that we were getting everything set for him and allowing him to build, to set the foundation for what we were going to try to build both in the bubble and then in the future and beyond. So it was a busy time that way and a lot to do. It flew by, and now we're starting to kind of get into that time of the year where things are a little bit slow.
Since you mentioned Sheldon, maybe we'll jump into that. I mean, obviously you've known Sheldon, a long time. We're going on, I think it's about eight or 9 years since he got hired here in the Sioux with you. I mean, talk about the job that he did, coming in November and, you know, maybe what you've seen from him as a coach, you know, even over the last year.
Well, when Sheldon came in, we had lost our sixth game in a row in Vegas, and then after the game, we made the coaching change and brought Sheldon in, and I think at the time we were 24th or 25th in the league by winning percentage, which was not a good place to be. And from that point on through the end of the year, but especially early on, the difference that he made was massive. And even despite some major injuries during the season, we were able to, from the point Sheldon was hired to the break in March, I think our winning percentage was 8th best in the NHL. So I thought Sheldon, despite coming in with really one pregame skate in Arizona to get the group ready and having to kind of do things on the fly, really did a good job in stabilizing the group. And then especially once we started to have some injuries, we were a little bit more erratic. But the most promising thing I saw from him, Brad, was the fact that, you know, no matter what was happening or what injuries we were accruing or how we lost games, no matter how bad they were, we were able to push back right away and respond well, which I think is a good sign for our group moving forward. And then I thought he did a great job during the pause in getting, you know, establishing the way that he wanted the team to play in the long run, not just for the return to play in the playoffs, but how we were going to transform ourselves in the long run and really maximize the talent in the group that we have here. And it would have been great if that would have manifested itself in the playoffs and we would have had a great long run. So you could point to that as a sign of progress, but I still think it's brewing here and the foundation's being laid with Sheldon and our coaching staff and the players, and I think it'll pay dividends for us sooner than later.
Obviously, your working relationship with Sheldon, obviously you guys get along, you know, extremely well, or you wouldn't be in this position working together again. You know, what's your working relationship like with Sheldon?
Well, we talk essentially, whether it's on the phone or texting back and forth, essentially the entire day, every day, with different ideas. I think my favorite part of working with Sheldon is that he and I, more than anybody else that I work with, can have massive disagreements and we can really challenge and get at one another. But it never impacts our relationship the next day. I think we're always trying to figure out ways we can improve the team, Brad. And, you know, we can challenge one another or question one another, and it never becomes a personal or hostile situation. We can get into some pretty heated debates and arguments, and the next day we know that we're doing that because we both want the same thing. We want the team to be successful. We want the team to grow and the team to improve. So, you know, that's really where I realized that this is going to be a relationship and a partnership as a manager and a coach that was going to be successful early on in our time in the Sioux together in 2012. And it's just continued to grow ever since. And I'm very thankful and fortunate to get to work with Sheldon.
You mentioned the time in the Sioux. You know, when you look back and, you know, I think it was 2011, the spring or summer of 2011 when you got hired here. When you look back, you know, Kyle Dubas now compared to Kyle Dubas when he first got hired in the Sioux, what have you learned about yourself over the last, you know, 9+ years?
A lot, and still learning a lot every day. But I think the key, Brad, for me was, as you recall, the first season in the Sioux did not go well, and we made some pretty substantial trades to try to bolster the group, and we still didn't make the playoffs in that first year. And the amount of criticism from the fans and I think rightfully so, from the fans and the media was pretty intense. And, you know, being from the Sioux and my whole family living there, and the fact that everywhere you go in the Sioux, if you work for the Greyhounds, largely people know who you are, and it's the big show in town, and there's not a lot of other jobs in the city that carry with it the same notoriety as whether it's the coach or the general manager or the owner or one of the key players in the Greyhounds brings with it in Sault Ste. Marie. And so what I learned in that time was, you know, is the fact that things are not always going to go as you may plan right off the hop. And you're going to face some tests, you're going to face challenges, you're going to face some adversity. And more than anything, what's going to be tested is your conviction and your belief in your own philosophy and plan. And you have to adapt and you have to evolve. But what I learned in the Sioux most, and going from 2011-12 or even early in 12-13, where we got off to a poor start again, was that, you know, you have to really block out the opinions of everybody else and stick with what you believe in and stand by your convictions. And if you do that, when things get turned around, the same people who you know, whether it's not so much with me, but with my family or friends in the city where that stuff impacts them, you really learn to block that out and that it doesn't really matter. The opinions of people outside of the facility and outside of the team. And if you continue to stay focused and stand by your convictions and move ahead, that that your plan will come to fruition as long as you're continuing to adapt and evolve and change it when it needs to be changed. So the owners in Sault Ste. Marie at the time, led by Dr. Liu, were amazing with me and gave me a huge opportunity at 25 years old. And I learned so much there. My time working with the team from when I was a kid to a teenager and the opportunities, whether it was Dave Mayville or Craig Hartsberger, Dave Torrey, gave me working with the team and then the owners when I was 25 and making me the general manager of the team. It's still for me, even though being with the Leafs is a huge honor and a massive opportunity, that situation being in my hometown in the Sioux will always be one that will probably be the most special in my life.
And let's talk about the off season, obviously for you guys in Toronto. I mean, you know, obviously right now people are talking about, you know, the Thornton signing and, you know, you bring in TJ Brody and Wayne Simmonds. You know, talk about some of these signings, you know, just in general in terms of, you know, what they bring to your organization as a group and how things, you know, maybe, you know, they make a little bit of a, you know, a change in maybe some of the dimensions of the hockey club.
Sure. On the ice, I think that one of our priorities heading into the offseason was to bolster our back end and to try to continue to try to find the right mix there. So TJ was the key for that, and we felt that he'll be able to play on the right side. He's played on the right side with Mark Giordano, excuse me, for a number of years now. And so, you know, he was a guy that we keyed in on as being a great fit for the right side of our defense. And that was the key on ice addition that we made on the back end. And Zach Bogosian, we added as well to the back end because we felt he just brings a completely different element that we don't have. Excellent penalty killer. A little bit more competitiveness and physicality to his game and, you know, coming off winning a championship. So we feel he'll add a lot there. And from what we've gathered from Tampa Bay and Buffalo and in Winnipeg, where he's been previously, he's going to bring a lot to the spirit of our room and the energy of our room as well with his personality. So we're excited about that. Up front, we had to make some difficult decisions to create the cap space to add on D by moving out Kasperi Kapanen and Andreas Johnsson, and those are key losses for us and homegrown guys that that had grown into good contributors for our team, Brad. So when we were looking to bolster that group, we've got our own internal developing guys, whether it's Nick Robertson or Philip Hollander. We wanted to add players that had a lot to prove, whether they had come off a poor season or whether they were getting near the end of their career and they were trying to win a championship, guys with a lot of incentive to succeed. And so we tried to backfill those positions by signing Jimmy Vesey from Buffalo, Wayne Simmonds from Buffalo as well, via New Jersey, and then also, of course, Joe. And as much as we think that, you know, these guys are still going to be strong contributors on the ice and have a lot left on the ice to give and help us kind of backfill and add depth to what we've lost in Andreas and Kasperi. I think in particular Joe and Wayne as older guys that are established and respected throughout the league, and knowing their personalities and what they're about as people every day, I think they're really going to add to the spirit of our group. They're really going to add to the energy and the environment of our facility each day. And they're both guys that love hockey and are highly competitive about it. So those were the keys for us in all of our additions on the NHL roster. Were guys that were, of course, good players, but also with a huge amount of incentive and that had a natural competitive spirit to them. So we're content with that and excited to see all these guys, in addition to Joey Anderson, who came in the Andreas Johnsson trade, who's got a history of winning at every level and great competitiveness, but also showing he can play in the NHL at a very young age, come in and add to our depth and backfill what we've lost while also making us a little bit deeper.
I wanted to get your thoughts on the junior level specifically. I mean, everyone's talking about this, you know, the OHL return to play, and, you know, the idea that Lisa McLeod, the Minister of Sport, is saying OHL can come back, but you don't have to maybe look at potentially having it as no contact. I mean, obviously, that's something that affects these kids going forward, in the sense that, I mean, this is a development level for, you know, for you guys at the NHL level. Just, I'm wondering if I can maybe get your thoughts on that, and, you know, in terms of, you know, what do you think about that possibility, or that that theory getting kicked around in a return to play at the OHL level?
Well, I sure hope that, you know, my own affinity for my own affinity to major junior hockey, I certainly hope that we can get back up and running, because it's huge in the individual communities, and you know, being from Sault Ste. Marie and having worked for the Greyhounds, the importance of the team in the city, and the job that the team has been able to do with Kyle Raftus and now John Dean in developing players. You know, you hope for the city and for the players who are counting on that for their own personal development, that we can find a way to bring it back. I'm also hopeful that it will be back in hockey in its usual form, and though I understand sort of what might be the reasoning behind the no contact rule and everything of that nature, I sure hope that you know, just the science of the spread of the virus, and the fact that these guys are going to be in close quarters with each other anyway, that the teams can do a good job of monitoring and preventing any illness from getting inside the clubs, and they can allow the groups to get back and playing as normal. So that's my take on it. I think it'll be really sad if we can't get major junior hockey back up and running in Canada. I know the QMJHL is tried, and they've it seems like it's going pretty well in the Maritimes, but have had a little bit of issue in Quebec. But I'm hopeful that in the coming months, on both the science side of fighting the virus and just kind of getting organized on the hockey end of it, that we can kind of get back and running at all levels. But I think especially important for major junior hockey in those communities and all across Canada and the U.S.
Well, Kyle, I appreciate the time. I know we're, you know, time is limited at some point. So I appreciate you taking, 15, 20 minutes here to chat. And, you know, we'll have to try to catch up again at some point in the, down the road here, for sure.
Absolutely, Brad. Thank you.
Thanks again, Kyle. Appreciate it.